We as Bitcoin miners play such a significant role in enabling the energy transition, right? It is the perfect definition of a flexible load that you can turn on and turn off. People take for granted when you wake up in the morning and maybe you turn on the lights or, you know, adjust the heat or the temperature. I mean, all that stuff's at our fingertips and it's available to us every day. Bitcoin mining facilities can absorb what is now far more intermittent renewable resources like solar or wind. And, you know, the sun shines when it shines and the wind blows when it blows. So you need to really capture that virtually zero cost energy when it's generated. Bitcoin mining, it's really enabling the capture of that energy and turning it from what is a local commodity that can't be stored into a global commodity known as Bitcoin, which is available to and can be traded around the world.
The Blockware marketplace is super cool. Basically, Mason's firm already helps investors and institutional investors on Wall Street get into Bitcoin mining with his giant data centers, but he wanted to make it even easier for the average person to get into this. So now with the Blockware marketplace, with the click of a button, you can buy your own Bitcoin miner from the comfort of your own home and have it instantly start mining for you straight into a Bitcoin wallet of your choosing. On the Blockware marketplace, you can see a bunch of miners for sale, you can see what the miner is, the price, the data center location that the miner is located in, the hash rate, the estimated revenue you're going to be making based on the current price of Bitcoin and stuff, and there are miners in all price ranges listed on there right now. Once you see a miner you want to look into more, simply click on it, and then you can see the serial number, how long it's been online for, you can see charts of the miner's historical performance, and once you're ready to buy a miner, simply click buy, follow the instructions, and then that miner that is already online in their data center will be instantly assigned to you. And that's it. You are now mining Bitcoin, getting all the benefits of mining without ever having to do any of the setup or maintenance yourself. So go to marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com to take a peek at all the miners that are listed for sale right now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blockware Intelligence Podcast. This week I have on Carrie Linglis from TerraWolf. Carrie, welcome.
Thanks, Joe. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you. Let's jump right into it. I want to kind of hear about your background and why you wanted to start working in the Bitcoin mining space.
Sure. I've spent probably the last 20 plus years or so in the energy infrastructure space. I started off in advisory. I worked at Goldman Sachs covering power companies, utilities, energy companies, and then went over to the investing side about 12 or 15 years ago. And started investing privately in energy infrastructure and predominantly power assets, both here in the U.S. and overseas. And that was everything from, designing, building, operating, dismantling, repurposing, you know, building our portfolio of power assets. And so that actually is what led me into the Bitcoin mining space, because as everyone now can appreciate, the fundamental aspect of mining Bitcoin is the cost of power, because it's the largest component, marginal component of producing a Bitcoin. And so we quickly realized that if you know the power sector, the power industry, if you know where to site your facilities to procure the lowest cost power at term and at scale, you're gonna have a significant advantage. So that's how we got into Bitcoin mining, and then we formed TerraWolf in 2020 with the mission of mining Bitcoin using zero carbon resources. And so we took the company public in December of 2021, which was both a great thing and a terrible thing, because we got in before the market evaporated, but we got in and then the market evaporated. So it's been a rough and tumble ride the past, 18 months or so, but we've really done a great job executing and building our business. And again, we're builders and operators, so this is what we do, and we're proud to now be doing it in the Bitcoin mining space.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess, do you happen to like remember your first touch point with Bitcoin? And like I asked some people this, and you know, some of them are like, yes. And I feel like most people hear about Bitcoin and they, you know, kind of think, oh, it's a scam or it's a Ponzi scheme at first, which I think is fair. Did that happen to you? Do you remember the first time you heard about it?
No, I mean, I think, we've been watching Bitcoin well before we formed TerraWolf. We sort of always have been interested in the space and how to leg in. I think just sort of personally, if I think about my personal experience, my husband was very involved in NFTs. For a period of time, and kind of got really geeky about it. And so I just remember, back when NFTs were first coming out and cryptocurrencies, and you know, some of the big heads of some of the, you know, more traditional finance banks leaving and starting funds to start it. That was sort of my first, like, wow, this is really big. It's not just a fad or a social media frenzy. This is here to stay.
100%. Yeah, it's really cool. It's interesting to hear about when people, like, first touched Bitcoin. On that note of, you know, Terra Wolf, I guess, going public back in 2021, and then obviously we had a crazy 2022. Did you expect the volatility? Did you not expect the volatility?
You know, we've again, being in the power business, we've always been through cyclical periods. I think, you know, we probably underestimated how quickly and how abruptly the market can shift in Bitcoin and in cryptocurrency. And so we were sort of, you know, as we launched the company, we're on a bit of a high for taking it public and all the work that led up to that. And so I think, you know, we sort of just dove in and sort of focused on what we do best, which is executing. We've, you know, as developers, we always know how to be disciplined in deploying our capital and our time. And so I think we just sort of out of the gate had to really put on our developer hats and that discipline and, you know, spend our capital wisely, because it was very challenging to raise money. And when we went public on a business plan, right? We had development plans and we had purchased miners, but we're still building our sites. And so we just sort of had to get down to execution, because at the end of the day, that was the only thing that was going to prove our value.
100%. What do you think about, I guess, broadly speaking, and you can take this however you want, like the future of Bitcoin mining, now that you've been in the space for a number of years, what do you think is going to happen, you know, over the next five?
So we are, you know, listen, we are fundamental believers in the Bitcoin network and the value of Bitcoin. And we as Bitcoin miners feel like we play a tremendously valuable role, not only in validating what is, you know, a highly valuable commodity, but it's sort of a two-part play for us, because Bitcoin mining plays such a significant role in enabling the energy transition, right? It is the perfect definition of a flexible load that you can turn on and turn off. And when you think about how the grid is structured, it's very complex, right? And it's, you know, people take for granted when you wake up in the morning and maybe you, you know, turn on the lights or, you know, adjust the heat or the temperature. I mean, all that stuff's at our fingertips and it's available to us every day. But if you think about what's behind producing that energy to make that possible, it's a very complicated network. So if you think about the tremendous load that Bitcoin mining facilities are, and the fact that they can absorb what is now far more intermittent renewable resources like solar or wind. And, you know, the sun shines when it shines and the wind blows when it blows. So you need to really capture that virtually zero cost energy when it's generated, because we don't have economic ways of storing it today. So if you think about Bitcoin mining, it is it's really enabling the capture of that energy and turning it from what is a local commodity that can't be stored and can't travel, you know, significant distances, and it's converting that into a global commodity known as Bitcoin, which is available to and can be traded around the world. So I think we all feel really proud and confident and excited about where Bitcoin mining is going now and in the next 5 years, because we feel like we're playing such a critical role, not only in just validating Bitcoin itself, but also in enabling the energy transition. And that's really, again, it's sort of a two-part play, I think, if you think about Terra Wolf.
Yeah, definitely. Are there other examples? I've heard that obviously quite a bit, like the idea that Bitcoin mining is a great flexible load. Was there never anything like this before Bitcoin mining, or is like Bitcoin mining just simply one of the best?
I think Bitcoin mining, I mean, listen, there are loads that can be turned up and down, but it takes time. And so if you think about it, and in the power industry, we used to have and think about our power resources based on responsiveness. And so there were, you know, if you think about a coal plant, it probably takes hours to turn up and turn down because things need to be cooled down slowly to make sure that you're maintaining the equipment properly. If you think about a gas peaker, that can be turned up and down much more readily because it can go up and down in 5 or 10 minute increments. But unfortunately, those are thermal-based fuels that are carbon emitting. And so when you think about Bitcoin, it doesn't care where it is. It doesn't care about what time of the day it is. all it really cares about is that it's access to power and, you know, a climate and conditions that are conducive to the equipment operating efficiently. And so Bitcoin mining, in my mind, as I think about it, I have a really hard time thinking about a more perfect load, because, and there's like sort of two reasons for that. One, it can be turned up and down in seconds. And so when you're siting your Bitcoin mining facility, the important part about it is that you're siting it in a place where you're not increasing the overall demand, energy demand in that location. You never want to be a burden on the grid, because as soon as you do that, prices are going to go up and then your whole economic trade doesn't work, right? Because you're not going to be profitable. So if you're siting in locations that traditionally have an excess amount of supply, there's probably only a few hundred hours, maybe 2 or 4 points in the year where they're at their peak. And during those times, what a Bitcoin mining facility can do is actually turn down their energy usage and serve as a tool that within seconds can be responsive to these grid operators. So when we talked, for example, to our grid operator in upstate New York and talk about the role that we can play in enabling their balancing of the grid, and they'll say, like, you know, okay, what kind of response time do you have? Is it like, you know, 10 minutes, 5 minutes? And we're like, I don't know, you could give us like 60 seconds or 30 seconds advance warning. And their mind is like blown, right? And so the other enabling part about that is there's a value to the grid for serving as that, for providing that service, right? It's valuable to them that they can have a load that can be up to, you know, 200, 300 megawatts, even more, that they can almost instantaneously say, you know, we're expecting temperatures to peak and load to surge. Can you guys modify or turn back? And by the way, depending on how much time I provide you, I'm going to compensate you for that. And so we're not only generating value by producing Bitcoin at the lowest marginal cost, we're providing value by serving as this resource to the grid. So we're very interconnected. And that's why I always think about TeraWulf as sort of a two-function play. We're obviously a play on mining Bitcoin and the profitability associated with mining it at the lowest marginal cost. But it's also for the revenues that we earn as being an enabling resource to the grid.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Do you think that, like, being this flexible load will be a requirement for nearly like all Bitcoin miners in the future as the market gets more competitive?
Yeah, I do. I actually, you know, we at TeraWulf, we talk internally, and our view is that if in 2 or 3 years from now, a Bitcoin miner is not earning at least 30% of their revenue from something other than mining Bitcoin, then they're probably not going to be competitive or succeed. Because what that means is it means that they're not in a location where they can provide this resource to the grid, and they're eventually going to be priced out because they're not competitive. So I do think over time, location's everything. Like in real estate, it's like location really matters. So you need to be in a place where there's a supply-demand imbalance and where your facility can serve as a resource, because then what you're doing is you're increasing the system utilization, which is bringing down cost for everybody, and you're getting compensated for doing that.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating, I guess, to think about how this might play out with energy and power grids. Like, do you think the market for like being these flexible load resources could be like larger than like the Bitcoin mining industry itself one day, or is that maybe not make sense?
I think it should. I don't know if the market will become bigger than Bitcoin mining itself. I do think over time, like I said, a significant portion of your revenue needs to be dedicated. We sort of think about it as a two-pronged approach. But I do think that, listen, there are a lot of high intensity load, you know, uses, whether it's high performance computing, AI, and all those things. The difference between Bitcoin and those things is the time, right? Bitcoin you can turn off, and it doesn't have consequences that if you turn off your high computing that needs to have, you know, 99.99% availability and uptime, that's going to have extreme consequences on that business. So I do think it's going to play a significant role and will be a crucial component to decarbonizing the grid. You know, if you were to think about it, and, people talk about decarbonizing the grid, and they talk about, well, we need to build things, we need to add stuff, we need to improve our infrastructure, we need to do all those things. I think it is that aspect, and we talk about this internally at TeraWulf, it's probably way overstated, because you have tools in your toolkit today that can reduce the cost and help you sort of bring in the timeline to decarbonization. And then that's Bitcoin mining.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you, I guess, personally have like a, since you have experience in the energy industry, do you have like a favorite source of energy that you think like the world should be building more of, or no?
Listen, I mean, nuclear is a very hot topic, right? There are people, and it's, I think that, you know, the, it's improving over time. Like there was a period of time where people had, you know, some people had very strong views about nuclear. And I think the sentiment is improving as we think about nuclear, right? Because there's not going to be one solution. It's not going to just be solar. It's not going to just be wind that's going to decarbonize the grid. You need to have sort of a suite of things, resources available. And the positive attributes of nuclear are that it's zero carbon and it's baseload. So it can run around the clock, and these facilities are massive. You know, we're directly connected to the Susquehanna nuclear power station. We're actually the first Bitcoin mining facility in the United States to be directly connected to a nuclear power station. It's a 2.5 gigawatt facility that employs like 1,600 people. Like, they are massive facilities, and they're built to run around the clock. And so when you site a Bitcoin mine adjacent to and co-locate it, you're, like I said, you know, thinking about utilization of the grid, you are providing an anchor tenant to help absorb the vast fixed costs associated with operating those facilities. So instead of having states rely on subsidies and things like that to make the facility economic to survive and remain available, I think you could have, you know, Bitcoin miners provide that service or that revenue stream to the nuclear power station to enable its economic viability. So I don't know if I want to say I have a favorite. I mean, nuclear and hydro, of course, for TerraWolf, those are our two primary resources. Those are the two most scaled and zero carbon resources that run around the clock. The sun is intermittent, the wind is intermittent. So I think if I was to choose, I would choose hydro or nuclear.
Nice. I feel like you guys picked right.
That's like why I said location is everything, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, your resiliency through cycles, your resiliency through the halving, ensuring you have the lowest power cost, ensuring you have the most efficient CapEx, OpEx. And, you know, we've also, you know, as we think about efficiency, it's also in terms of our mining fleet. And we have one of the most efficient fleet of machines in the space too.
Nice. Yeah, I want to get into, I guess, more specifics about TerraWolf. Before that, while we were on the topic of energy, like, how do you see the mining industry and the energy industry evolving, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years? Do you think that, like, energy companies might acquire Bitcoin miners? Do you think Bitcoin miners might somehow acquire power assets? How do you think about that?
I think there is a natural line of consolidation that could be had for some of these large utilities that are owners of nuclear power stations and large hydro facilities. I think it makes perfect sense. There is probably not one utility that we haven't had conversations with that are starting to learn about Bitcoin mining, how it can be deployed. You know, the challenge that these utilities have is, you know, they are known to travel at a very slow pace, right? And you sort of couple that, like, that very old, archaic, slow-moving industry with the polar opposite in terms of Bitcoin mining, where you're sort of, time is of the essence, and you're developing and deploying equipment as quickly as possible. So there's a little bit of a challenge there in trying to get the timelines to coincide. But I do think over time, as some of these utilities become smarter and more confident about their participation in the space, and Bitcoin mining becomes less scary, I think there's a natural partnership that could be had there.
Nice. Yeah, I agree. I feel like time kind of solves a lot of things. As long as Bitcoin doesn't die and the industry remains,
right. And I think, you know, very few of, you know, they're very conservative organizations. And so I think a lot of them have internally and probably not out, you know, publicly advertised, but they've got groups that are dedicated to figuring this out and working with developers. And so I think it's going to just be a matter of time until, you know, they're going to slowly dip their toe in. And then once it happens, I think you'll see it become widespread.
100%. I agree. Let's dive into TerraWolf. So let's learn, I guess, tell the audience more about, like, what your strategy is, what you do is specifically at Terra Wolf, and then maybe like the different sites that you guys have.
Hey everyone, this week I want to talk about Stamp Seed. This is very cool metal plate where you can literally stamp your Bitcoin seed phrase with this hammer that they sell you into this metal plate. This is a must-have for all Bitcoin holders. If you have taken self-custody of your Bitcoin, you want to make sure you've recorded your seed phrase on something that is fireproof, waterproof, and time-resistant. This is a great product for Bitcoiners who have taken self-custody and want that extra level of security and resiliency to store their Bitcoin. So if you are interested in this product, definitely check out stampseed.com. Use code BLOCKWARE15 for 15% off the entire website.
Sure. So I mentioned up front, so we formed TerraWolf and our mission is to mine Bitcoin using zero carbon resources. For us, that's incredibly important. Not only is it obviously the right thing to do, but as I mentioned, we think about our strategy at TerraWolf really is two-pronged, both in being the lowest cost marginal provider and, you know, by nature, renewable resources are the lowest cost source of power, but also to be an enabling resource to the grid. And to do that, you have to be in locations where you've got either intermittent resources or an overabundance of supply where you can serve as a tool to sort of balance that out. And so we formed TerraWolf in 2021. We have two sites. Our first site is called Lake Mariner, and that's on the shores of Lake Ontario in upstate New York. The unique thing about that site is that it was home to the last operating coal plant in the state. So we worked with the state to retire that facility, decommission the site, and go through the remediation. And so now we've transitioned that site to what was a 700 megawatt coal plant that was putting power onto the grid to a Bitcoin mining facility that is sourcing power from the grid. And we can build up to 500 megawatts of Bitcoin mining capacity there. We've got 110 megawatts operational today. And we just announced plans about a week and a half ago to expand that by 43 megawatts by the end of the year. So really incredible site. It's located 25 miles from Niagara Hydro, which is the largest hydroelectric station in the state. And so we've got, you know, that we're actually the first stop on the 345 KV. And so from where that power is delivered. So what made that site not so great as a coal plant, you know, it was producing very low cost power, but all the way upstate New York. And to get that downstate to the low, you know, demand pockets in New York City or Long Island, you know, either became too costly with congestion or, you know, just insufficient transmission to get it there. So we've now been able to sort of repurpose that site and locate load that can actually absorb all of that tremendous low-cost power. So if you think about hydro, like wind, like sun, when it's generated and you need to absorb it when it's produced. Otherwise, it goes to waste. And so by having our facility literally the first stop off of the 345 KV, we're able to absorb all that power and then convert it into Bitcoin. So that's Lake Mariner. Our other site, as I mentioned, is in central Pennsylvania. It's called the Nautilus Crypto Mine. It's a 200 megawatt mining facility that's directly connected to the Susquehanna Nuclear Power Station. We have 50 megawatts of that facility. We're partnered with Talon Energy, who owns the balance, and Talon actually owns the nuclear power station as well. What's very exciting about that, other than being the first nuclear Bitcoin mining facility, is the fact that we've got a 5-year power contract for 2 cent power fixed. And so that's 2 cents. It's not 2 cents plus, you know, small fine print, you know, adjustment for XYZ. It's 2 cent fixed for 5 years. And so as we look across our portfolio with Lake Mariner, which averages about 4.5 cents year round, and then our 2 cents in Pennsylvania, we're at 3.5 cents. Which is significantly below our industry average.
Yeah, no, that's very impressive. You mentioned like how you were going to, I guess, expand the first plant relatively soon. What led to that decision, and when? How do you think about like expanding your operations?
Yeah, so one of the most critical aspects is we think about where to site your facilities is one. Obviously, the energy supply demand imbalance, access to zero carbon resources, and scalability. So we're a vertically integrated Bitcoin miner. And what that means is that we control our sites, we control our power, we own our own infrastructure. We're not a hosting model. We deploy all of our own equipment. And so our two sites not only have access to extremely cheap power, they're scalable. So like I said, at Lake Mariner, we've got 110 megawatts operating today. We've got another 43 in development that should be deployed by the end of the year, but we can build up to 500 megawatts at that site. So we've got significant opportunity to expand. And then similarly in Pennsylvania, like I said, we've got 50 megawatts operating. We have an option to expand it by another 50 megawatts. And again, that facility is a 200 megawatt facility on what is a 2.5 gigawatt nuclear power station. And so, you know, while we have no commitments in place today, there's certainly opportunity to expand beyond the footprint we have there today. So scalability, access to zero carbon resources, control of the site, all those things are really critical as we think about expanding.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome. I do want to hear about like what machines are you guys running, like which model ASIC, what led to like you choosing those? And I guess, you do own all of the machines and you
don't
have any like institutional hosting clients or okay, cool.
So we deployed Bitmain machines and we've got a very good and close relationship, very collaborative relationship with Bitmain that we're proud of and you know, has been very valuable to us as we've built our business. And so at both of our sites we're deploying Bitmain machines. If you saw about a week and a half ago, we announced that we were the first scale order that Bitmain had for its latest generation, miners, which are the S19JXPs. And so they're the most efficient miners in the space that has brought our overall efficiency of our fleet down to 25.5 joules per terahash, which is, you know, significantly among the lowest in the space. So we're very proud of that. And we've been very happy with the performance of the Bitmain machines. We do operate all of our own equipment during, during the market downturn during late 21 and 2022, we did entertain hosting agreements, and that was purely to take advantage of the infrastructure we had available. So when we deployed our capital at the beginning of this segment, I mentioned that, you know, we put our heads down to execute and we were deploying our capital as efficiently as we could and to get the highest return. And so we focused on our infrastructure first. And we figured, let's get the infrastructure built out so that the plugs are available. And so as soon as we can plug in the miners. The last thing we wanted to be doing was having, you know, a bunch of miners in a storage shed and trying to figure out where to plug them in. And so what that did for us is it enabled us to host miners, to host third-party miners and earn revenue that way while we generated and got the capital together to purchase our own miners. So we have one 5,000 machine hosting agreement at Lake Mariner that's about to expire. We're going to fill those with the new S19J XPs. And at that point, we'll be 100% self-mining.
Nice. Very cool. Is that something that you guys, I guess, intend to do for, you know, the foreseeable future, like only do self-mining or is there
ever? Yeah, we definitely prioritize self-mining. I think having an infrastructure first approach is a very conservative and smart way to build your business because, you know, as quickly as the downturn came and as quickly as the, you know, revival has come, you know, you always want to be prepared for a down market and be positioned to the extent the market's not moving the way you want it to. So we'll always deploy our capital to build the infrastructure and then fill it with our own miners. But to the extent we find ourselves with having available capacity, nothing precludes us from hosting down the line. It's just right now our priority is to fill it with our own miners if we can.
Yeah, it makes sense. I guess with ASICs so cheap, you might as well if you're a Bitcoin miner at this point.
Right, exactly.
How do you like think about the regulatory environment? I know like New York has had problems in the past, mm-hmm. I guess maybe for new miners, not existing miners. How do you think about it broadly, you know, on like a global level, US level, and like maybe a state level?
So as we think about regulation one, it goes back to my first comment that location matters, right? You need to be in environments where you have a productive and open dialogue with the legislators and local stakeholders. And we've been doing just that in New York for a very long time and have the same beneficial sort of relationship in Pennsylvania. And so our priority and our focus right now as we think about regulation is education. So we try to be, we have an office in DC, we try to be as out in front of legislators and local stakeholders as much as we can to help them understand not just Bitcoin mining and what it is and what Bitcoin is. I think people are sort of getting there on that, but more on the second leg of it, which is how enabling it is to decarbonization and how it's a tool that should not be overlooked and should be understood, especially as you start to think about compensating people for the value that they're providing. And so regulation in the right way, done in the right way, is very validating for the sector. And so we support regulation as long as it's not limiting business, right? And so educating is a way, is a step in a way to get there. We've seen over, you know, the last year a number of bills propose and then fall and then, you know, so there's always going to be something. But I think over time, as long as both sides are open and educating one another, then I think it will be done in the right way. You know, you mentioned New York. There is a moratorium in New York, and fortunately, it doesn't impact TerraWulf at all. And what that, you know, what that was done, was intended to do, was to prevent, you know, developers or owners from taking what should be an otherwise retired thermal plant and repurposing and extracting value by running, you know, running Bitcoin or mining Bitcoin at that location, using that power to mine Bitcoin. And so it's targeted at companies that, one, own power plants, and then two, are using thermal resources, so gas plants, coal plants, to mine Bitcoin directly on site. And so we're neither of those. I think we're on the right side of history by being zero carbon, which is a significant value as you think forward to future legislation. And so I think that in and of itself is enabling to us. And then our focus, given that we're power people and we're no stranger to regulation or regulatory oversight or involvement, is to just be part of the dialogue.
Nice. Yeah, very cool. I guess on that note of you know, Bitcoin mining obviously consuming a lot of energy, and that being one of the big talking points, I guess, on both sides, you know, thinking about energy, like, what is your argument for people that say, like, hey, Bitcoin mining uses too much energy, is to go into that idea of, like, Bitcoin mining is a flexible load and it's actually good for the grid and it's actually good for consumers? Is that your argument, or do you have anything else?
I think there's a fundamental, as people think about, like, you know, everyone likes the salacious headline, like, you know, Bitcoin mining is as much as, you know, a country, uses as much energy as a country, and it's like, okay, which country are you talking about? But I think it's because there's a fundamental misunderstanding with how the grid is built and how it's operated and what is needed to enable decarbonization. So it's not about how much energy Bitcoin mining uses, because you can't really start going down the path of dictating what energy can be used for what, right? I mean, that's a rabbit hole that no one's going to come out of. But I think you need to think about how it's used and when it's used. And that's where, you know, Joe, as you point out, that's when you get into the flexible load discussion. I would challenge anyone to think about what a purest form of a more flexible load would be other than Bitcoin mining, especially Bitcoin mining that utilizes zero carbon resources, right? The ability to absorb what might otherwise go to waste, capture that value in the form of a Bitcoin, and then enable that value to be traded is a tremendous feature. And then add to that the fact that you can be responsive at times when those areas are at their peak demand and provide a super valuable tool that I'm not aware of any other high load user that can provide that level of responsiveness, and to be as, to be as indifferent as to what time of day or where in the world you are. It really doesn't care about where it is or what time it is. And so I think that is sort of an underappreciated. And I think once people get that, and it's sort of like a light bulb goes off, and the discussion shifts and the mindset shifts. I think it's just the focus is on the wrong thing. And listen, that's not to say that there aren't things that Bitcoin miners can improve upon and should improve upon. We're not perfect. You know, there's work that can be done with sound. There's you know, communities that have had sound complaints around certain Bitcoin mining facilities. There's things of that nature that can be and should be improved, but I think the focus has been on the wrong thing.
Yeah, definitely fair. Yeah, being in a few Bitcoin mining facilities. People don't realize how loud it really is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of air that's being forced through most air-cooled facilities. It can be very loud. I don't know if you've seen, but I'd encourage you, we put out a video about a month ago that provided a virtual tour of both of our sites, because it's impossible to bring everybody to site. And then in Pennsylvania, where we're at a nuke, there's obviously very heightened security elements around it. So we did a video to try to take people in, and we're going to repeat it over time as our facilities expand. But in one of the shots, we're inside while the fans are on, and one of the operators like held up a dollar bill just to show like how much air is actually passing through, and you can't really even hear yourself. So it can be very loud.
Yeah, it's definitely unlike anything else I've ever experienced. I mean, because I think about, you know, people using Bitcoin, you think of it as like a really digital technology. You don't realize like, hey, there's actually a lot of energy and a lot of like physical resources that go into this thing called Bitcoin.
It's a true infrastructure business, right? You've got buildings, you've got interconnections, racks of equipment. It's intense. It's an intense business.
Yeah. I think I've got two more questions and then we can wrap it up. I think we're about 8 to 9 months away from the 2024 halving, where the block subsidy is going to get cut in half. How are you guys thinking about that?
So as we approach the halving, we are squarely focused on profitability. You know, obviously, with the halving, the economics are going to be cut in half. And so, you know, given that we are sort of on all fronts, whether it be from a cost of power, an operating cost, or a miner efficiency, we're one of the most efficient fleets in the space. So we are confident in our ability to get through the halving and still be profitable. I think there are other miners that may be more challenged in getting through. I think there's going to be a little bit of a squeeze, and there's probably going to be some winners and some losers. As we think about the hash rate, you know, there's a lot of estimates and projections out there that the hash rate's going to drop significantly after the halving. You know, I think we at TeraWulf think it's going to take more time. A lot of, you know, the hash rate's going to continue to tick up as it has. And if you think about it, those are all sunk costs, right? The infrastructure and the miners have been paid for. So I think there's going to be a period of time where, those miners that may not be as profitable are going to sort of wait it out and see if there's times when they can be profitable or not. I don't think that it's going to fall off a cliff. As we think about that halving, it's obviously maintaining our profitability, but there's also going to be a tremendous amount of opportunity, right? Because, again, for some of the companies that aren't as fortunate to make it through, there's going to be assets and combinations and all that sort of good M&A opportunity that's going to come from a bottoming out of the market.
Yeah, I think with, you know, TeraWulf's low power costs and your machines that you're running, I feel like you guys are in a pretty good position to take on the halving.
And that's why we're aggressively expanding our operations, right? Because we're excited about it. We're highly confident that we're going to be profitable, you know, regardless of the market environment. Obviously, if Bitcoin price goes up, that's great for us. But if Bitcoin price stays flat or goes down, we're still going to be profitable. And so we're excited, and we're sort of deploying as fast as we can as we go into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Last question, then we'll close it out. Do you have an opinion on like the macro environment of like, you know, what's going on with markets, what's going on with Bitcoin? I know like the halving is, you know, short term potentially bearish for miners, but also could introduce like, you know, a supply shock into the market, and maybe we'll see Bitcoin go on another major bull run. Do you have any idea of, you know, what you think is going to happen over the next few years?
So listen, like I said at the beginning, we are really strong believers in Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin, and in the network. I think this past year, there has been no short. I mean, with the bank fallout, I mean, everything was sort of thrown in front of us. And I think the value, I mean, what resiliency we've shown throughout that period in terms of the value of Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And so I'm really optimistic about the future. In terms of the overall macro environment, I think a lot of stuff has been cleaned out this year. And a lot of the bad actors and a lot of the bad, you know, players, that stuff is now front and center. And there's no more sort of hiding behind gamesmanship or clouds. I mean, there wasn't a ton of disclosure, right? All these companies came to market. There were like 24 companies that came to market in the matter of 12 months. And, you know, as a, in the commodity business, you line everybody up by unit economics, right? And it's very straightforward to look at one company versus the other. You try to do that in the Bitcoin mining space and your head's going to like roll off because everybody discloses their metrics in different ways. And it's very hard to compare apples to apples. That is slowly changing, and the standards are being established for disclosure, for you know, for how you report all of your fundamentals, financials, contracts, all that sort of stuff. So I'm really confident that the industry itself is moving to the right place, with the overlay of regulation to further validate the industry. So I think we're headed for good things, and I'm excited about it.